You can just take a moment to sense into your breath and take a deep breath in and let it back out again and let yourself totally relax. Just sense into what it feels like to be you right now. The feeling of your sitting bones, of your hands on your lap or somewhere else. And take a moment to think of everything that is solid and resistant in your body. Everything that gives you form, your bones, your feet on the floor, and we're just taking a moment to call into mind everything that is solid and earth element in your body. Your teeth. Take a moment to say hello to your teeth, your bones, and the material of your bones, calcium carbonate, the same material as the one out in the world, making up the rocks. The same atoms in your bones as those that make up the cliffs outside. And all the time, we're actually shedding atoms, shedding skin, shedding hairs. And as we focus into this solidity that we share with the world outside, with atoms that have traveled through billions of years to be there. We allow ourselves to imagine these solid atoms traveling now in a different direction. As we shed cells, hairs, all of these physical parts of our body all the time, we allow ourselves to travel, speed up time. Perhaps we become rock and then become human again in a different time. And the same with everything that is liquid in our body. You can take a moment to presence with the saliva in your mouth. The tears in your eyes, moisture in your nose. Take a moment to feel into the pulse in your blood. And now think again of everything liquid outside of your body. Vast oceans, rivers, rains and clouds. Water in the soil, imagine the water inside other living creatures out in the world. The blood of a salamander. The saliva of a sheep. And all the liquid in your body is continuous with that liquid outside. And the water molecules in your breath coming out of your mouth right now are the same molecules acted on billions of years ago by plants. You might even share a molecule, a water molecule, in your mouth right now with a dinosaur millions of years ago. And now we allow everything that is liquid to speed up its cycles and travel forward, passing through clouds, oceans, rivers, meeting with your solid atoms in the year 2077. And slowly you allow your atoms and parts of yourself to assemble in this distant but immediate time, a time that looks quite different to this time, but still recognizable. If you imagine all of the micro changes that have happened, tiny decisions that have led us to a different way of living. And you tune into a discussion amongst three friends, three beings who were alive in 2020, but who have sped through the hallways of time, the channels of time, and are living right now in the year 2077. It is New Year's Eve that year, and they are meeting as they have done for the last 57 or so years. To look back on the year that has passed, look back on the many years that have passed, and plan into the future. Set goals, ambitions, but also share disappointments, mistakes, failures, and successes. So when you're ready to open your eyes, please do so now. And join us for this glimpse into this far-off solarpunk reality. Phaetopian boy, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Solarpunk girl.
Zentai Punk, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. I think we've established connection. Zentai Punk, how are you tuning in today?
I'm tuning from my stream.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there is like there is not a good stream connection, but I can hear you.
Good. I'm trying out the latest kind of hologram technology, but it's a bit glitchy. They haven't managed to do the mouth very well, but sadly I can't be physically in the stream today, but hopefully this will be all right. Where do we start? I haven't actually made a plan for this. I just thought, you know, we'll just log on and kind of work it out as we go.
Well, we basically have 2 days left before we need to start the work again. Mm-hmm. So I think like we could just have a little catch up of, what have we done, what is left on our to-dos, and what needs to be done for the year ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got into quite a reflective mode, actually. I was just thinking back to this, you know, I know we're meant to look back at just the year past, but I don't know, especially the last 20 years has been so mad. Sometimes it feels like it's just happened in a day. It's just so much has changed so quickly. I'm really curious to hear about Fetopian Boy, about your, what's happened in the kind of legal research you've been doing, kind of nature rights, and what's happened there.
Well, it's been a long, long journey. I mean, starting back 100 years ago, when Christopher Stone wrote his seminal article on should trees have standing? Wow, it's amazing to think that was a century ago. 1977. Mm. Wow. It really was a visionary sentiment to think about nature as deserving and belonging amongst the criteria that we think about when we look at governance, making decisions about how all of us can recognize, be aware, keep track of and monitor what we're actually doing in this world. That's been the toughest struggle, I think, of the last century. But I'm so hopeful that we're getting somewhere now. Mm. We actually have ways of bringing trees, our local bioregions, into consideration when we think about all the different decisions we're making. And that's been one of the missing pieces, I think, from the way that institutions have been looking at this ordering, this coordination that they have been set up to do. But as punks, I think we recognize that the default standard behaviors and norms that institutions and organizations have been trying to corral us into can never truly be complete. Mm. And yeah, reflecting back on this last year, but like you said, reflecting back on the last 100 years, how nature has stepped forward and we've supported how we can bring nature into the conversation with the actual ability to listen. I mean, Solar Punk Girl, you've been working on our new listening devices. Tell me how that's going.
Well, it's been tough to get that last grant. I mean, honestly, sometimes it feels like all the kind of research grants are somewhat biased to the AIs as opposed to the more than human. But you know, I still remember our first more than human council in 2028. Gosh, I think I was in human years in my 30s then. It's just very funny to think about how we started off, how clunky that was with our, you know, using these methods of play and imagination. And there was a period of pretty wacky research where I think most people thought we were completely losing our minds. You know, I remember one of the people from my research group going and spending 2 years sitting with a tree, just trying to get a sense of how we could speak on behalf of those beings. And obviously since then, we've got the technology now to, you know, allow us to decode some of those messages and, you know, use the kind of physiological patterning of trees and plants to get a sense of what they would like us to do on their behalf. But at the beginning, it was purely imagination that was allowing us to, you know, deeply listen, not just to the more than human world, but also to that part of nature that lives within ourselves. And it's really funny to think back to the concepts and the kind of ways of being and understanding that, you know, back in the 20s and the 30s were considered, you know, somewhat alternative or kind of avant-garde, and in some cases quite flaky. I guess much like the psychedelics were considered back in the 1900s, you know, and now obviously that psychedelics are fully integrated within our education system. So just so much has changed. I think looking back, it gives me hope that when you're trying to do something, when you're trying to change kind of fundamental patterns of the way we perceive and what we value and how we make sense of the world, at the beginning, you're always going to seem like someone who's, you know, maybe a little bit losing it or even unrigorous, but actually we've been developing that rigor. So things that were once unrigorous, now, you know, we've got our protocols around integrating the more than human into our governance, and it's kind of bizarre to imagine institutions without a voice of nature within, you know, within the governance and boards. Anyway, I don't think I'm making much sense. I'm just freestyling here and just kind of remembering these moments. But I know we wouldn't have been able to do it without the collaboration with Zentai Punk's governance protocols, and the way, you know, the way you guys have used technology to allow us to govern on kind of planetary scale. I mean, that's just been amazing to work with you.
Yeah, well, right now, you know, like I'm still trying to fix a few bugs. It seems like somehow the AIs and the trees are not really going along together. There is like a little bit of a debate happening, and we don't manage to reach the consensus as to like the next regenerative agriculture strategy. The AI somehow is really pushing towards having a little bit more of bioengineering happening. Whereas somehow the trees are actually pushing back on that. And so we're trying to, you know, involve a little bit extra parties into the discussion. We were thinking maybe the boards could be called in into the Senate. But I don't know, like I'm trying to work it out, because the AI have always been on the side of the trees. It's only like since a few months that there is this discrepancy, and we haven't understood the source of the discrepancy. So I'm a little bit concerned, actually, I have to say. I don't know, like the governance structure is still working out, but I really don't know like what's up with the AIs. Like somehow they got disaligned. And maybe we just need to like have them train a little bit further on the tree language. I don't know. I don't know if it's like a misunderstanding between a communication problem or whether they actually disagree.
Hmm. That sounds tough.
Yeah, it's a bit tough. So I'm debugging. I will let you know a bit more in a few days.
I noticed on a different topic, I noticed, Fatopian Boy, that you used the word institutions, which I thought was quite, you know, quite avant-garde of you, seeing as we, you know, we all decided we'd stop using that word about a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I was a bit shocked also to hear that.
Yeah, what did you mean there? How come you're using that word again?
I know it's an anachronism, and we worked so hard to shift the dialogue away from this one-sided perspective. And I think ever since the research group started working on the notion of institutions, I think the just looking at things from that one perspective, I 100% agree. It's very biased to be thinking just from the perspective of these structures. We've come so far since then, and we're able to, as you were referencing, Solar Punk Girl, really consider these broader resonances in terms of the bioregion, the use of IoT to actually listen in on a technical level, but also the use of councils of all beings to actually fully resonate in. But I think it's useful to see how far we've come by thinking about institutions. And that's why I went back 100 years to Christopher Stone's article, because I think when we used to think about the law, it was all about the way that these institutions structured things in their own image for their own goals. And it felt so all-encompassing and overbearing to have these disembodied goals structuring our system in ways that were so out of alignment with our core goals. And yeah, it just made me reminiscent thinking about goals now as we're gathered here at the end of the year, as we do every year, to think about our individual goals and how those relate into these collective institutional goals, to think about how we were so railroaded, again, to use this old anachronistic term, but you know, we were on tracks. We didn't have the freedom we have now to really fly where we want to soar and gather emergently with our tree friends and our AI friends into these assemblages of intent. Once upon a time, I think most people didn't really get to even think about their goals. And certainly we didn't think about the goals of nature. And so right now we have this challenge where, as Zentai Punk has said, we're getting some misalignment again between the AI assemblages and what we're hearing from nature and the bioregion around us. And maybe it's worth bringing in just a little history around how we got here from being completely dominated by institutions that structured the systems of economic and social dynamism that was leading us down a certain path, and how we veered away from that. Because I think in these pivotal moments when there's potential misalignment, we need to go back to our punk roots and think about, you know, what is it about the freedom and the liberty to consider the unconventional that really drove us forward to where we are today?
Yeah, so I have to say something just because, like, I'm really, like, a little bit struggling here. I don't know, you know, like, I'm afraid that we've been moving on so fast in the past 70 years. And I mean, of course, great, we really nailed down on the institutions, and like, I think, of course, society is like much more fluid and dynamic and decentralized as it used to be. But I have to tell you, like, I'm a bit concerned by those AIs. It's as if they had like somehow find a way to coalesce and to create like this kind of rhizomatic network. But I'm not so sure where it's going. Like, somehow I'm wondering whether we might need perhaps to reintroduce at least a little bit of institutional scaffolding, just to make sure that the institution that we have created until now actually maintains itself without being easily co-opted by those AIs. I'm not talking about all of them. It's a little subset. It's a little rhizome of AIs that somehow is kind of going in a strange direction. And again, like, maybe it's a bug. Maybe it's just my fault. I did something wrong with them. Maybe they don't fully understand what's going on around, but there is something wrong there. And I'm wondering, like, shall we not, like, is it okay? Like, are we not just doing the same mistake that our former society have done, which was just like focus only and exclusively on institution, forgetting everything about institution? And I feel like maybe we have overreacted, and we have like, because we saw all the negativity and all the drawbacks of institutions, we just decided to completely reject them. But sometimes I have to tell you, I'm very tempted to codify a little bit of rules and roles into these fucking AIs. I haven't done it yet because, of course, I'm a little bit afraid of retaliation somehow. But I have to tell you, like, I'm not so sure what's going on. And I feel like there are at least a few of those institutional AIs which are kind of going rogue. You know, and I don't know if the trees and the birds will be able to calm them down. I don't know, like, I'm really confused. Can you give me some suggestion? What should I do?
Zenta, I'm so glad you brought this to our end of year trio, because you know maybe we could help think about what your goals for this next, for 2078, could look like. Because I'm hearing what you're saying about the kind of the worries and the concerns that you've got about the rogue AI rhizomes. But you know, we worked so hard to throw off that institutional baggage and kind of programming, and you know, just thinking about those decades of struggle where we really had to kind of introspect into our own psyches and look at, you know, where is kind of institutional hierarchical colonization that happened internally, how to kind of deprogram that. So I have to say, it does make me a little bit nervous when I hear of the urge to bring back some of that codification. At the same time, I can imagine, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe it is dangerous to have removed so much of those kind of guide rails and roles and the ability to you know, the checks and balances which were so important. I mean, Fetopian boy, what do you think?
I mean, this takes me back to the early days of the data demons. I mean, those were really the first AI agents that we were able to, in a sense, reclaim back from the institutional overlords that were previously orchestrating these AI rhizomes into manipulative assemblages that were, as I was sort of referencing, railroading us into their institutional goals without any real awareness or attentiveness or care towards our individual or our bioregional health and well-being. And in the late 2020s, early 2030s, when we started to introduce these data demons that were institutionally programmed and codified to work on our behalf and work on behalf of our local communities and our local bioregions, it felt so hopeful to be able to actually take back power over this entire weaponization of AI back into our local communities. Back here in Fetopia, we were able to fully gain a handle over the local economic and social interrelations based upon the data that was being generated by all of our community. And we knew that that wasn't going off into some larger institutional mechanic that was ultimately going to be extractive and remove our agency from the decisions that we were taking on a day-to-day basis. And so these data demons were really that first step in giving us back a semblance of alignment with AI. And we've had since then 40 years or more of real collaboration and coordination with all of these technologies of radical collaboration, that of which AI was just a part, but we were able to use, Zentaipunk, you were so key to this. We were able to use blockchain and distributed ledgers to really create these rhizomes that took into account our needs and our intentions. And so in thinking now that they're going out of alignment once again, it's concerning. And maybe we didn't fully exercise those extractive institutional intentions and tendencies, and maybe they're coming back in once again. Or maybe I'm just biased against that oppressive regime that we managed to get ourselves out of. But
well, you know what I think is, like, I mean, we've seen it like in the past. We've seen how, you know, we developed those AIs that you know, really supported us and you know, and facilitated our task, and you know, enabled us to assess so much more information that we would have been able to do by human. And there was like this kind of symbiotic relationship for a while, and then somehow the AI went too far and kind of like overcome our own interests for its own. And you know, like I remember like how happy I was, like the first, when we had the first communication between the AI and the trees, and I was like, wow, this is really it. Like, we really figured it out. We never have to worry about governance again, because obviously the wisdom of the trees and the plants will really help us actually understand how to govern ourselves. And the fact that AIs can actually speak to those creatures is just so revolutionary. And seeing the AIs learn and develop themselves with the insights of the trees, it was like, I think, the best years of my life. And you know, it's been about 50 years that they are being trained on tree insights and wisdom. And somehow I'm starting to see, it's really early, so I might be wrong, I don't know, but I'm starting to see the AI kind of moving further, like taking on their own route and just like going further to what the plants would ever go, you know. And it's always this extremism. And I think the AI just has this tendency of learning and excelling to the point that it reached such an extreme that just blow up. And so I'm just wondering whether the rhizomatic mechanism, which is this embulbing and debulbing and rebulbing, and which is working so well for learning, but didn't we reach a point in which the learning is becoming exponential, and it's not learning anymore from the trees, it's learning from itself? And perhaps this is where we might need some scaffoldings and some constraints, just so that the AI stays in line with the trees, as opposed to getting into its own loop. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm wondering, like, it's just like, it's very, I understand completely your concern. Like, I don't want myself to even think about bringing back some institutions here. But I'm just wondering, like, of course, an AI is not a tree. You know, we cannot pretend. They understand each other. They can communicate with each other, but they are not the same. And so do we need to just let them and see where it goes, or do we want to put some, and the problem is that I would like the trees to answer that question, but of course the AI will not communicate, will not translate the answer if the answer was that we had to add the scaffolding to them, you know? And so can we really trust the AI to communicate to the trees and to tell us the truth? Like, I feel like we're kind of like in this weird situation because we cannot speak to the tree by ourselves. We need to go via the AI. But if the tree were to disagree with the AI, would the AI tell us? I don't know.
Solarpunk girl, maybe the mycelium can help. I know you've been working for a long time on mycelial organization, half a century even. Is there a role, do you think, for support from the mycelium?
Well, the mycelial interfaces could actually come in quite helpful here. You know, as we know, they facilitate the communication. You know, they're such loyal servants in a sense. I mean, symbiotic servants to the trees. And I, you know, latest research shows that the relations between the AIs and the mycelium are quite good. You know, they seem to cognate in similar ways. So I do feel like that's a really good point. You know, maybe this is a place to bring in those mycelial APIs and allow, you know, maybe there needs to be, just like, you know, we learn early on in school, you know, in conflict resolution, maybe there needs to be a third party. Maybe there needs to be a mycelial actor to help facilitate what sounds like it could become quite a tricky breakdown in communication. But I also, as you were speaking, Zentai, you know, I have been engaging in somewhat esoteric thoughts recently about the role of humans in these interactions. I mean, you know, maybe it's a little bit out there, but you know, we've so significantly removed the role of the human being in these governance decisions, and really kind of given over the power to these more than human beings and agents. But is there something, you know, is there a role for the human being in these, you know, discussions?
I don't know, Solarpunk. I think I would be even more concerned to reintroduce the humans than I would be concerned to reintroducing the institutions. You know, and I wonder, like, it's like it's always this thing we never know. It's like things from the past can no longer be tested. But I always have this like weird debate, you know, with the various creatures around, about whether is it the institution that corrupted the humans, or is it the humans that corrupted the institutions? And we never know. We decided to get rid of both of them. At least within our governance structures, but you know, I think it's very risky to like, yeah, I don't know, it's so hard. Like, I really wonder, do you think, like, if we start adding institutions again, we might actually corrupt the trees as well? I don't know, that would be like the fucking end, because then we really only have the AI to rely upon. Or is it that maybe now that we actually got rid of the institution, we could slowly reintroduce humans into the governance structures? This is a billion bitcoins question.
Yeah, it's tough decisions.
It's a very high risk thing, and like, is the gain worth the risk? I really don't know. I'm very curious. Maybe we could do like a very small experiment. Yeah. And just reintroduce them into like a very small subset. So what you're saying, basically, if I understand correctly, is that you would rather have us incorporate some human into the debate than having us reintroduce some institutional scaffolding.
That's right. Just human beings, no institutions, no roles, no, you know, none of that, just human beings. And there have been some early experiments in New Zealand that have been showing some promising results. I know it's a completely different situation there because they were so far ahead of the rest of the world, even back in the kind of 20s and 30s. But And it might be the influence of the Maori people there. There could be stuff to learn there. You know, not all humans have been behaving the same way through all of this.
That's a really great point. I think the way that they were back then able to reintroduce the notion of the rhizome as a sort of interface for how humans can work with nature, I think is fascinating. So that it wasn't humans acting as humans, but really humans being a part of this larger assemblage of humans and nature and data-driven AI. They had their data commons. I think it was established in the early 2020s that was really influential in bringing school children and non-profit civic organizations and the Maori tribal organizations together into this rhizomatic assemblage of intention. And I think in that kind of configuration, if we can hark back to that sort of approach to bringing the human voice back into governance, maybe we can have a sort of a more mycelial representation of humanity in this dialogue and conversation between AI and nature. And so if once upon a time we were looking to nature or AI to help us mediate our relations with other non-human actors, maybe the time has come for humans to adopt that mediatory function again, but not as the prime mover, but much more in that Maori tradition of being one part of a larger assemblage.
So I have to tell you, I have a little bit of aversion to that. Maybe we can think, maybe instead of humans, because like, you know, the problem of humans and their identities and their status and all this stuff is like, I think like the problem is that the even though we got rid of institution, we didn't fully get rid of identities and egos. And so, you know, weird dynamics might emerge again. Maybe we should, and I don't want to sound self-centered here, of course, but maybe instead of humans, we should actually only allow Zantai to join into the governance, because at least we just eliminate all these egocentric identity layer of humanity, and we can just focus on the actual level playing field of ideas. What would you feel about that?
It's been a while since we thought about the Zentai characteristics that elevate humanity into this plane of fairness and equality. Can you just go over that again for us, Zentai Punk, as to why that is unique? Because I remember, but I just want a reintroduction, if that's okay.
I mean, of course, you know, like, I mean, basically we have seen it over the past thousands of years. It's like humans somehow, they just have this like, and we don't know, again, we don't know if it's inherent or what, but they still have it. Like whenever they can see things that can distinguish themselves from others, then they grab it as a construction of status. There's like this obsession that humans have about building status, which is this most abstract and meaningless thing that has ever been created by society, and yet they just grab it. And whenever they see something, they just grab it in order to identify themselves as different from others. There's this very egocentric thing, and I think, you know, our society of course has contributed a lot to removing this ego, but it's still, you know, it's an evolutionary trait that needs to dilute itself over time. And so with the Zentai, of course, we're just trying to help evolution. And while we as humans still have distinctive characteristics, then we just try to cover them. We try to hide all our distinctiveness, so that we all become the same, and so that even though there is still the ego, we hide the ego, we suffocate the ego under the suits, And again, everyone then become the same. And there is this field of equality. And this is kind of like we're trying culturally, we're trying to use those materiality and those tools in order to help the mind get let go of all those intrinsic desires of egocentricity. And it has been working very well. I mean, we see how the human society has really evolved ever since we cover ourselves with those anti-suits. So I'm just wondering, like, I think that at least the humans that have been training these muscles, you know, it's kind of like, it's like in the past we had like the monks, you know, the Buddhist monks that were training their mind at letting go of the ego. And now we just have one extra tool, which is like a physical and material tool in order to further let go of the ego. So I think like the Zantites have really been training themselves a lot, and maybe they are more likely to be less likely to be corrupted with, again, this egocentric desire of power and status. Soon as we incorporate them into a governance horizon.
I'm so glad you brought that all back. It's so easy to forget sometimes that deliberation and politics was seen as some sort of dirty concept, and that technology could fix everything. And it's thanks to the Zentai and the punks in general, solar punks and Zentai punks, that we were able to recognize how important politics and power actually were to bringing us here today, and the deliberation that was liberated from the bane of status and role, the deliberation that could truly be based on ideas for what they were worth in and of themselves. So easy to forget how important that was. And I think you're right, Zentai Punk. We should bring that back again. It's really important.
Yeah, I think the Zentai delegate councils are probably the best, you know, the best I've seen of truly truly deliberative and egoless decision making on behalf of all beings. You know, I won't go into the, I don't think we've got time to talk about the kind of risks of anonymity, because, you know, corruption is still amongst us. It's still real, even after all these years of decades of trying to push that out of our society. But, you know, I think if we can trust anyone, it's probably the Zentais with their training. We've only got a couple more minutes left before we've got to go for a bacterial council. Wondering how we want to close out this meeting as we look forward to the next year.
Maybe you could give us a little heads up on the councils that we have upcoming. Moral imagination has been such a critical part of our ability to engage in councils. I'm excited to think about the ways in which you have been gathering these councils, Solar Pongal, and maybe you could just give us a little heads up on what's coming up next with these different councils that encompass moral imagination.
Yeah, I mean, the next few days are quite packed, but obviously the start of the year is a, you know, really important time for these councils. And I'm particularly excited about the Lichen Council. So obviously that's, you know, that's really bringing our imagination in a whole new kind of symbiotic form of, you know, fungi and algae. So my interest, you know, back in the 20s and 30s was, you know, far wider in terms of councils of all beings, and, you know, really just including all beings from the night sky to the you know, to mountains, to trees, to dolphins and more. But I think now, you know, I'm becoming more and more interested in those symbiotic councils that really allow us to deeply embody and understand symbiosis as an organizing force. And you know, that's what makes me hopeful about the AI and tree interface. If we can really learn from the pattern of symbiosis. I think there's something there. And if we use our moral imagination to better understand that and take that on, and maybe we can be programming more of that into our AIs. But yeah, we have the Water Being Council coming up on the 2nd of January, welcoming all beings from watery worlds. We've got the Ether Council, where we're bringing together, you know, we've got the AI Council as well. You know, the first moral imagination into AI cognition was definitely a turning point last year. And then obviously we've got the kind of the big global council. So, you know, do make sure that you mark your calendars for that. That's every year on the 10th of January. So that's it. That's the kind of lineup for at least the next few weeks.
Well, it's ever gratifying to know that you're there, Solarpunk Girl, and that you're there, Zentaipunk, to bring hope and convene these trusted circles. Or I think, as our forebear Ursula Le Guin would say, they are the mind's indispensable relationship with other minds, with the world and with time. And so thank you for maintaining this hope and this trust through these councils and through ever working on this punk governance of ours.
Thanks, Fatopian boy. Do you want to ring us out with your wonderful bell? Yeah, master of ceremonies. I'll hand over to you.
Until we gather again at the next council, Solarpunk Girl, Zentaipunk, friends in the wider global council.